Next item on the agenda is item number five, case number 05-2780. Mr. Badger.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Birchwood Motel requests authorization to install a 750-foot-long, 6-inch diameter sewage discharge pipe under an already permitted 700-foot-long by 5-foot-wide community pier adjacent to their property along Chincoteag Channel in the town of Chincoteag. The project is protested by a nearby Oyster Grand leaseholder and several property owners. The project was remanded to the commission for rehearing by the Circuit Court of Accomack County. This project was initially scheduled for a hearing in June, but was continued for 2 months so that council could have time to review the staff evaluation and a report submitted by Dr. Wessons. Some background first before we get into the actual public hearing. At the February 27, 2007 commission meeting, the commission voted to approve a 700-foot-long pier, but unanimously denied the discharge pipe for a proposed package sewage treatment plant designed to service an upland development, given the additional prohibited shellfish condemned zone and potential for adverse impacts of water quality, shellfish harvesting, and public health. A permit was issued for the pier, and this pier has been constructed. Okay. The applicant appealed the commission's denial of the discharge pipe to the Circuit Court of Accomack County. Judge Glenn Tyler, in an opinion dated March 12th of this year, remanded the case to the commission with directions to rehear the application and make findings of fact given the evidence presented. In the court's opinion, the commission's conclusions and decision went beyond the evidence presented at the February 27, 2007 hearing. Since the community pier has been permitted and constructed, this rehearing concerns only the 6-inch sewage discharge pipe. It's a quad sheet showing the location of the project in the red circle. Causeway coming into Chincoteag, South Main Sheet, the island of Chincoteag, Chincoteag Channel. This is one of our 2007 aerials. Encompassed in the circle is the area in question, Chincoteag Channel, the causeway, South Main Street. Carnival Grounds is adjacent and just north of the Birchwood Motel is in this general area. Sewage discharge package plant will be behind the hotel itself, and the 28-unit townhomes will be in this area also. This is the permitted pier, 700 feet long, 4 slips, and the commission approved a bridge over the inner channel so that the people that are inside here with the smaller piers can get out, and the federal project channel is about, I believe, 230 feet offshore. You can see a boat coming down there. The original application called for the installation of a 6-inch sewage discharge pipe under the proposed pier that would service the entire Birchwood Motel housing complex. This consisted of 4 waterfront townhomes, which are here, with the remaining housing projects across the street. The 4 townhome units have their own sewage line and has tied into an existing drain field across the main street at the Birchwood Motel. As a result, they will not be part of the proposed outfall. Again, the sewage treatment package plant is back here. The 28 units will be inside the yellow lines approximately. And these 4 are not part of the discharge. And then it will come out and discharge here. The applicant has leased the Oyster Grand under the proposed discharge pipe since 1995. His family has leased it since the early 1930s, and I believe probably before that. Historically, Chincoteag Channel has been leased for the propagation of oysters, and you can see the oyster reefs all along here, and they continue on down the shoreline. Tommy Mason, a nearby Oyster Grand leaseholder, was directly impacted by the initial sewage discharge point and the resulting health department prohibited area or zone. This is Mr. Mason's lease here. Prohibited zone originally came down on top of it. To address the initial prohibited zone, the applicant reviewed his revised his application prior to the commission's February 2007 meeting by extending the Ipaw Pike northwest an additional 50 feet, which shows up here, and by extending and altering the Ipaw location. The health department was able to adjust the prohibited zone so that it did not directly impact Mr. Mason's nearby oyster ground. The oyster ground lease presently in the name of Mr. Birch, however, was still permanently condemned as it lies entirely within the proposed prohibited zone, which is here. Mr. Mason's family on his wife's side has had this ground probably since the 30s or before also. Again, this is some vacant area in here, and you can see the rocks. And this area over here is still vacant. Encircled here are the protesters involved. These four were basically dealing with the inner channel. You can see the little inner channel here. So once the pier was built and permitted, those protests basically were alleviated. Mr. Mason is still protesting the project. He fears that the sewage discharge will affect the condemned shellfish waters on his lease, oyster ground, resulting in a possible change from condemned shellfish areas to prohibited shellfish area. A change from condemned to prohibited would prevent Mr. Mason or any other leaseholder from relaying their shellfish to approved waters for self-purification. Mr. Mason states that such a change would effectively eliminate any shellfish harvesting currently or in the future. And VIMS commented on the community pier, however, they did not comment on the outfall structure or the effluent. Normally, VIMS leaves this up to the health department and DEQ. This is a drawing showing the pier, showing the outfall extending to the northwest, a little closer view of the two ends, the pier, and where the outfall would be extended over here. A little bit of a problem with the drawing here. If this outfall pipe was permitted, it's showing it going right across the small channel and would obviously stop any navigation underneath of the bridged area. If permitted, this pipe would have to be extended up or buried underneath to alleviate the navigation issues. Ground shots showing the pier, showing the bridge. Now you can see why would have to go up or underneath, and the rocks, oyster rocks off here on the left, which are part of Mr. Birch's. And another ground shot, again showing some more oyster rocks and the pier going out. In April 2005, DEQ authorized Birchwood Housing Development to discharge effluent into Chincoteague Channel. On June 5th of this year, Robert Smithson from DEQ in an email stated that the DEQ permit was based on the application and subsequent correspondence by the applicant, dated February 24, 2005, that confirmed that in their intent to follow the Health Department Bureau of Shellfish Sanitation's recommendations by extending the discharge outfall to an average channel water depth of greater than 1 meter. And this is an estimated 720 feet off shore. This correspondence was signed by the applicant, Donald Birch. Mr. Smithson continued by stating that the applicant does not have the permit option to discharge the effluent at the shoreline. That would have resulted in denial of the permit due to the impacts upon shellfish resources. Furthermore, the preliminary engineering report issued on June 29th of 2005 by DEQ stipulates that any outfall length significant to assure 1 meter water over the end of the pipe at all times, and that VMRC and all other affected agencies approve the location. The Health Department Bureau of Shellfish Sanitation states that the project will affect condemned shellfish waters. While it will not cause an increase in the size of the total condemnation, a prohibited area will be required within a portion of the currently condemned area. The actual size and location of the prohibited area was modified in light of the applicant's agreement to extend the outfall both channelward and upstream. The new boundaries of the prohibited zone include all of Mr. Birch's entire oyster ground, as well as 13.78 acres of additional state-owned leases, leasable subaqueous bottom, for a total of 15.7 acres. And again, this in blue is the proposed prohibited area, and this was done on May 27, 2008. As you can see, it does not affect Mr. Mason's oyster ground at this time. This is Mr. Mason's oyster ground, but it does include all of Mr. Birch's oyster ground here, plus vacant area here, and plus more vacant area there. Again, it's 15.7 acres total. Again, another map showing our leases and the prohibited area, proposed prohibited area, and Mr. Birch's pier, Mr. Mason's, and Mr. Birch's oyster ground. On May 30th of this year, VMRC's Conservation and Replenishment Department Chief, Dr. James Wesson, conducted a shellfish survey of the area to be impacted by the outfall. Dr. Wesson's survey showed significant populations of both hard clams and oysters. Within the intertidal area, oyster density varied from 400 to 800 per meter, with a relatively high percentage of market-sized oysters. In the subtidal area, there was a population of hard clams with a density greater than two clams per meter, or 8,000 clams per acre. By current standards, this is regarded as a high density of clams, and they also found a large quantity of eelgrass in the subtidal area. Dr. Wesson stated that relative to other areas on coastal bays of Virginia, the shellfish population within the area of potential prohibited condemnation would be considered high to very high. And these are where the sampling was done. Mr. Wesson did not sample on top of Mr. Birch's lease because he didn't have permission to be there. Not that Mr. Birch would have denied it. He just did not go there for that reason. Again, some ground shots. As you can see, the oysters, quite a few. They look to be about 3 inches. Yeah. These are the townhomes and Mr. Birch up here. Again. These are the rocks in the general area. As you can see, they continue farther south. They're here. This is Mr. Birch's area and Mr. Mason's lease. And there are our lease grounds laid on top in the proposed prohibited area line in red. And Mr. Mason has applied for this area through here. He had originally had a small piece here. We reverted back to the state last year by misunderstanding. He didn't realize that he'd lost it, so he reapplied for it. The Army Corps of Engineers has issued a regional permit number 19 for the community pier and a nationwide permit 7 for the effluent outfall pipe, and that was issued back in December of 2006. No other state agency has expressed opposition to the project. On a related matter, it may be noted that the Court of Appeals of Virginia recently affirmed the State Water Control Board's decision to deny a discharge permit to Captain's Cove Utilities Company. This case also involved condemned shellfish waters and the potential impacts of both commercial and recreational uses in Chincoteague Bay. The court found no authority that the Water Control Board must allow an applicant to discharge into state waters. In the Captain's Cove decision, the Court of Appeals said that the board has the statutory authority to prohibit discharge into state waters where such discharge would violate the general standard by interfering with designated uses of that water. Staff believes this unpublished decision supports the Commission's authority to grant or deny any permit that may impact public use of state-owned lands and the waters overlying these lands. Our summary and recommendation: while staff acknowledges that the applicant received a permit from DEQ to discharge effluent into Chincoteague Channel 3 years ago, the applicant does not have a permit option to discharge the effluent at the shoreline, as was suggested by the applicant's counsel in arguments before Judge Tyler. In fact, DEQ stated it would have denied the permit due to its impact upon shellfish resources if it was that case, if this was the case. The applicant therefore only had one option from DEQ, and that was to discharge offshore to a shore 1 meter water was over the end of the pipe at all times. Even in its deliberation, however, the preliminary engineering report issued June 29th by DEQ clearly stipulates that VMRC and all other affected agencies had to approve the outfall location. Therefore, it would appear that DEQ's permit may not even be valid unless or until the applicant receives authorization from other all other affected agencies, which would include VMRC. Further development and redevelopment on Shinkatig is clearly hampered by the lack of a central sewage system. Town has relied for the most part on individual septic systems with some exceptions in an effort to address this shortfall. The town of Shinkatig in December of 06 selected wastewater management to be its consulting engineer in effect to develop a public sewage system. Wastewater Management Parity and circulated a white paper in December of 07 that identified a strategy to achieve an island-wide public sewer system. The most environmentally friendly approach and the recommended alternative for the disposal of the treated effluent is in the report appears to be deep water injection. In a deep water injection program, highly treated effluent is discharged into and through a well or wells that have been drilled into the deep aquifers far below the local drinking water aquifers. If selected and pursued, this alternative would most likely not have required any condemnation or prohibited areas, since wells would be drilled in the upland and treated effluent would not be discharged into tidal waters or state waters. This long-term approach also seems to meet the preliminary endorsement of both DEQ and EPA. Such an approach would seem to allow continued development and redevelopment of the island without unacceptable habitat or resource impacts. One last slide I'll leave up here. In granting or denying a permit for the use of state-owned land and the waters overlying those lands, the Code of Virginia and the Commonwealth's or the Commission's Sevacuous Guidelines direct us to consider, among other things, the effect of the most effect of the proposed project upon other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned bottom land, marine and fisheries resources, wetlands adjacent and nearby properties, anticipated public and private benefits, water quality standards established by the State Water Control Board. Based upon the proposed method of construction, it appears that the actual installation of the 6-inch diameter discharge pipe can be accomplished with minimal impacts to state-owned Sevacuous land. The discharge pipe, however, will directly affect condemned shellfish waters and require a new 15.7-acre prohibited area within a portion of the currently condemned area. Although the applicant has revised his application so that the prohibited area will no longer directly impact Mr. Mason's lease or stream, we must consider the effect of the proposed project on other reasonable and permissible uses. The prohibited area will still impact 13.78 acres of leasable state-owned Sevacuous bottom, as well as the lease presently held by Mr. Birch himself. This lease was granted for the purpose of shellfish propagation, not for development purposes. The lease confers no right on Mr. Birch to construct or operate a discharge harmful to the waters or natural resources of the Commonwealth, or the right to adversely impact the rights of others. If Mr. Birch allowed his lease to revert, or if the lease was not renewed for lack of use, it would then become unavailable for others to lease. In addition, there are other unleasable areas that would be impacted by the prohibited area and would therefore be unavailable. According to Dr. Wesson, the existing shellfish population within the area is considered to be high to very high. The Commonwealth of Virginia will therefore effectively lose the resource and the ability to lease these grounds for orchard planting or from which shellfish could be relayed to approved waters for shellfish or self-purification. This would effectively eliminate any shellfish harvesting from this area, both currently as well as in the future. In light of the foregoing, and after evaluating the merits of the entire project against the concerns expressed by those in opposition to the project, and after considering all the facts contained in 28.2.1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends denial of the application.
Thank you, Mr. Badger. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Schick.
Could you go to the slide before?
Slide four?
Yeah. I guess the one that shows the oyster grounds. I guess the one that's highlighted down on number 20 would be good. Yeah, oh, that's good. Okay. So between Mr. Birch and Mr. Mason, that's unleased bottom there?
That's vacant bottom land.
So that's vacant bottom land. Mm-hmm. And that is in the presently condemned, but if this was approved, would then be moved to prohibited.
Yes. Let me go down into this. I think the one with the there it is. I think that shows it a little bit better.
So he's also on the right hand side too.
That's correct. In front of the carnival grain, all this is vacant. Now, this area between Mr. Birch and Mr. Mason is vacant also.
And the area that Mr. Wesson looked into was the unused port, the unleased portion.
It was right in this area right through
right
here.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure I had that clear in mind.
Further questions from the commission? Mr. Tankard.
You mentioned in closing that the Birches currently had a leasehold over the area they had expected to put this outfall. Mm-hmm. But we also know in 28.2-604 that people who, applicants who have leased oyster grounds need to be propagating oysters. Are they currently propagating oysters at this location?
They have not come up for renewal. But every 10 years they would come up for renewal and they would have to show what they have done. And I couldn't tell you when the last renewal was.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Badger. The applicant here or represented?
I'll just leave you. Can't figure that out.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Martingale. I'm here on behalf of the applicant along with co-counsel Neil Inslee. I'm going to very briefly set the stage, make a few quick remarks, and then turn the matter over to Mr. Inslee to handle further. First of all, just for the record, I want to establish that we're proceeding as if we are also operating on the existing record. This is on remand from the Accomack Circuit Court, and we're simply adding to the record that already is before the commission. There is one point of apparent confusion that appears in the staff report, and it was repeated here today that I want to clear up. In the staff report, it is asserted that counsel for the applicant, and presumably that would be me, because I was the one who argued in front of Judge Tyler, made the point about the ability of the applicant, and I'm looking at page 4 of the report you have in front of you. It's 1-4, 1-4. It says that it was suggested by the applicant's counsel in argument before Judge Tyler that there is the option of discharging the effluent at the shoreline. Actually, that appears in Judge Tyler's opinion on page 9 of his opinion, which before you it's 3-10. And Judge Tyler was reciting what happened in the record here at the VMRC when Chris Pomeroy appeared before you and made certain representations. And what he said, I believe, is fully accurate. And it says this: Chris Pomeroy made further representations. Badger had informed Pomeroy that another feasible way to do this project would be to cut the pipe off above mean low water, as in other projects along Chincoteague Channel, and that would be approvable, needing no further permit. Pomeroy stated that Birchwood, however, is trying to take the outfall offshore at the request of the Virginia Department of Health Division of Shellfish Sanitation in order to reduce the scope of the administrative prohibited area for shellfish, where there would be a smaller area required than otherwise. So that's where that comes from. And if you look at the document that was signed by Donald Birch and submitted. It was clearly at the request of Mr. Smithson and DEQ to take care of concerns they had. So I want it to be clear that neither I nor anybody else on behalf of Birchwood made any misrepresentations or stretched anything in front of Judge Tyler. The record is what it is, and if you look at his opinion, he recites accurately from the transcript that he got as a part of the VMRC record, and that's what Judge Tyler reviewed, and that's what he commented on. The final point I want to make before turning this over to Mr. Inslee is this. I've had the occasion to appear in front of you one time, and no decisions ever get made in a complete vacuum. And you'll recall that I was here for a decision that you rendered May 27th of 2008 dealing with a stormwater discharge pipe that was approved for the 61st Street oceanfront area of Virginia Beach. And I simply want to make this point. That applicant involved untreated stormwater to be discharged into the ocean where people swim, fish, and use the ocean and use the bottomlands. This involves an application that I contend is vastly superior. It proposes to treat what is being discharged. There's no evidence that anybody is swimming in Chincoteague Channel, and there's no evidence that anybody currently is eating any oysters out of this particular area. And so I would ask that you think about what you approved in May of this year when you're comparing what you do here today. I have a hard time believing that staff could recommend approval at 61st Street and this body could vote to approve something at 61st Street and then turn around and have a negative staff recommendation here today. And I'm hoping that you won't follow that recommendation and you instead will attempt to be as consistent as possible. I'm happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I'll turn it over to Mr. Inslee.
Any questions, Mr. Martingale? Mr. Tigard?
Let me make sure I understand this correctly. Is there some ambiguity as to what it is the DEQ requested of the Birches to have the outfall out into the channel?
I don't believe there's any ambiguity there. I think that what the DEQ was asking is that the discharge be into deeper water because, as Judge Tyler notes at the end of his opinion, dilution is the solution, and that's something I've heard this body say before. And so the DEQ requested that it be extended out. Once that was done, that satisfied the DEQ. And then really what the question ought to be, in our view, is where exactly does the pipe go? That's what the VMRC ought to be focused on. And the body that has the primary responsibility for concerning itself with water quality and with shellfish is the DEQ. And so their concerns were met. And that's why that document was submitted. It was at the request of the DEQ, and the DEQ got what it wanted. And once they got what they wanted, then they simply made the point that they were initiating an approval subject to any additional permits that would be needed, including a VMRC permit.
Okay. Follow up? Further questions? Mr. Morgan, I'd just like to draw on the analogy that you made pertaining to the previous case in Virginia Beach and this one. Quite honestly, from my opinion, I think they're apples and oranges. I think when you're talking about stormwater going into the Atlantic Ocean with a significant dilution rate compared to what you have here and what is arguably a smaller area with potential impact to a known resource, I think they're a little different items.
Well, I will concede that in terms of how often the stormwater system gets turned on, that would probably be less often. However, the volume of liquid waste coming out of the stormwater pipe would be much, much, much greater. We're talking about many hundreds of thousands of gallons of totally untreated liquid waste going into the ocean where it can wash back to shore. The upwelling effects have been totally, they're totally unknown at this point, and there were a lot of question marks there. So that's why I raised that. Whereas with this particular pipe, the evidence in the record already is that the effluent that will come out of the pipe meets the state's full body contact swimming standards. And so it's obviously a lot cleaner than what is going to be put into the ocean of Virginia Beach if that ever gets going.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Inslee, good to have you before the commission.
Thank you, Commissioner. It's a pleasure to be here before the commission again. My name is Neil Inslee. I'm an attorney with the law firm LeClaire Ryan. I'm here today as co-counsel on behalf of the applicant in this matter that's on remand. First, I guess we should go through and looking at staff's report. The first issue is that of the leased ground. Initially, when this permit was requested, it said we had a objector, Mr. Mason, that said that it would affect his ground, and that was a concern. And the applicant in this case did what we would expect any prudent and conscientious person to do, and that's reassess and try to move it to alleviate any concerns of objectors. And that's exactly what happened. It was moved, and Mr. Mason's ground was taken or not factored into this equation. And I'll get more into Mr. Mason's objections as they stand now in a few minutes. But as far as that goes, other lease bottoms were taken out of this equation. Then staff says, well, it still affects his own lease ground. And I think it's important, as was pointed out by staff, to remember that this isn't a situation that Mr. Birch ran out and leased this bottom in anticipation of trying to do this. This is something that's been in his family for, it appears to be, close to 100 years. This leasehold has been held that long. These other areas that are being referred to in this proposed prohibited area is, to our knowledge, and there's no evidence to the contrary, that these have been unleased now for 100 years or so. Nobody has ever shown any interest in having a leasehold in any of this area. So I would say it is certainly speculative to say that someone now, after all this time, and we need to protect this unknown person's potential interest in leasing this bottom, or keeping it from becoming a prohibited area. So we believe that as far as looking at the interest and assessing the proposed prohibited area and its effect on state-owned bottoms, the fact that it is not currently leased, it is condemned, so it would require relay. Contrary to what we may have seen or heard in the record, and my family having been in the oyster business for a long time, and I think this commission is well aware that transplanting oysters from condemned areas to good areas for purification is not cost-effective, lucrative business. Otherwise, you would see a lot more of it being done, and you would see, after 100 years, a lot more of these condemned areas requesting to be leased. The other side of that is, for that argument to prevail, it would be saying that the public policy of the commission now is to encourage people to lease these condemned lands and conduct relay activity, which my understanding would be contrary to what one would think you would want the uses for these condemned lands to be. Not to mention, business is business, and it's just not going to be profitable enough for that to happen. Mr. Mason, the main objector in this case as it stands now, and as staff indicated, there were other objectors to the pier. Those concerns were alleviated. That permit has been issued. It says that Mr. Mason feels that it could affect his land if something were to happen, which we don't know what that might be, and it could prohibit his area from being used. Again, all of this is remote. All of this is speculative, and all of this was considered by DEQ and DSS and the State Water Control Board when they issued the initial permit for this area. Now, there is some contention as to whether there are conditions on that, conditioned upon this permit or not. The bottom line is they are responsible to look at the effect of shellfish resource, as is indicated in staff's report. It says, for potential, they denied it to come through the bulkhead because of its potential effects on water quality, shellfish harvesting, and public health. This matter has been adjudicated by the State Water Control Board when they issued the permit that would affect water quality, shellfish resource, or public health. The only thing remaining under the permit at this point is the actual location of the pipe and its encroachment on subaqueous ground. That brings us into the VPDES permit itself. I think it's obvious at this point, and there obviously was some confusion, and you look in staff's report, there was some confusion over what might have been relayed as far as where this could be located. Obviously, it couldn't be located through the bulkhead, or it would have been done that way. The reason it couldn't, and the reason that DEQ or DSS said they would deny that permit, is because of its effect on shellfish harvesting in the area. Obviously, they looked at this issue. And looking at this issue, it's important to remember that they conducted a public hearing on this permit. They opened it up for public comment on this permit. Mr. Mason, and certainly the commission, if they had concerns about water quality, shellfish harvesting, or public health of this outfall, could have attended that hearing where these matters were properly addressed. That didn't happen. The permit was issued. Those matters have been adjudicated. The condition on the pipe is, they said, for the discharge to reach a depth of 1 meter. That's where we get Mr. Mason having to go out as far as he does into this area. It is important to know, again, that in this permit process, the initial permit process that Mr. Birch and Birchwood went through to get this permit, DEQ and DSS conducted scientific studies. They looked at water quality, dye tests, shellfish harvesting, all of this in a very scientific format that they use for their permit process. So at this point, for the commission to deny it based on water quality, shellfish harvesting, or public health, they essentially would have to come up with refutable evidence to that scientific evidence that DSS, DEQ, and Water Control Board used to come up with this permit. Obviously, there is a, or was, in this situation, issue between VMRC being involved in this process. And I think that that was addressed later on in 2007 by a memorandum of understanding, which I have a copy of. I'm sure you all know what it is, but I'll offer it into evidence for the record. But the permit itself was issued by the issuing authority that addresses these concerns that now the commission is considering in denying this permit, or staff's recommendation denying this permit. Our position is it's previously been adjudicated and approved. The only issue now is where do we put the pipe where we'll have the least effect on subaqueous grounds. As far as what was pointed out in staff's report, whether to go over or under the channel, if approved, I can assure you the applicant will do whatever the recommendation of the commission, whatever they feel is best, whether to go under subaqueous grounds or make it along the top of the dock. They would certainly agree to that. It was also referenced in staff's report, Dr. Wesson's study of the area. If I could go back to... Yes, sir, please. This was a study conducted and referenced in staff's report of Dr. Wesson. This is the proposed prohibited area. What it appears Dr. Wesson did in his survey is took samples, as you can see, most largely outside of the proposed prohibited area. I'm not exactly sure what the purpose of this would be unless he, like Mr. Mason, is hypothesizing that something might happen that would increase this area, but there's no evidence that that will happen, as is indicated in DEQ and State Water Control Board issuing this permit after conducting their dye test. It does raise the question, however, under protocol, and I have a copy of that I will also submit to you as evidence in, or a matter of the record. The protocol from Dr. Weston's program talks about conducting random samples, and it also calls for visual observations, things such as this. But I think it does raise a question as to why the study was done largely here. I know staff made the comment that he didn't do anything over here because he didn't have Mr. Birch's permission. Well, I can assure you he certainly, to my knowledge, didn't ask. He obviously asked of Mr. Mason to get permission to do the study here because, as you can clearly see, some of the samples were taken off of his bottom. So I do find it a little confusing why the applicant in this case was not contacted or offered to have a study conducted on their private ground, but the only objector was. And again, this leaves all of this area over here that the commission or staff is concerned about as this potentially leasable ground that they want to keep into play for some unknown person that might come along after 100-some-odd years and decide that they're going to conduct shellfish relay in a condemned area. It doesn't show anything about what might potentially be over here. We can only assume if they didn't go over there because it wasn't anything over there. We don't know. But as far as a random sample, you know, I make this kind of analogous to my neighbors. It's funny. I was sitting in the backyard thinking about this case, and my neighbors have a sandbox for their kids on right at the back part of the yard. And it would almost be analogous to say you go to the sandbox, you find a bunch of shovels, and you say, because I found shovels in this area, Neil's entire backyard has a rate of 400 to 800 per meter shovels and buckets and things such as that. I think if we were really going to take a look at what is there, we should have surveyed and sampled certainly the applicant's private grounds as well as all this other area. Certainly leaves it, again, up to speculation. It was also referenced in staff's report, the Captain's Cove decision, and I find this particularly interesting, and I'm actually glad that it was brought up or referenced in the report because it shows procedurally the difference between the permit you have before you and that scenario. And this is the exact argument that we're concerned of and that we are trying to make here. In Captain's Cove, first of all, I'll point out the obvious differences between this permit and Captain's Cove. First of all, in Captain's Cove, we're talking about a huge housing development project. I think it was like 710 homes. They were also talking about impacting 143 acres of what I believe in reading the decision, and you can certainly clarify me if you know otherwise, of uncondemned grounds or largely uncondemned grounds that would have condemned otherwise pristine areas. Of course, there's concern there in doing that. Another issue was the number of protesters. We have one now in this case that is a leaseholder of an adjacent property that won't even be directly affected by this proposed prohibited area versus hundreds in Captain's Cove that were concerned about this. The other main issues or differences between these two instances is this is already condemned. I know there was a lot in the opinion in Captain's Cove that talked about recreational uses and things such as that. This isn't going to happen here, as was illustrated in Captain's Cove. People don't recreationally clam in condemned areas. It also advances the argument that this commission, and my understanding is, they have always encouraged people to construct these sites in already condemned areas instead of having to condemn further areas, and that's exactly what the applicant has tried to do here. The main issue with the Captain's Cove decision is, again, our argument. In Captain's Cove, all of these issues were addressed as part of the original affluent permit. For the when the applicant in Captain's Cove put forth their permit process, it went to the State Water Control Board. And if you look in the decision at Captain's Cove, they go through and address shellfish harvesting to the point that even this commission had someone from Dr. Wesson, again, and I have a copy of that I will submit to you after my presentation, a copy of his survey that he did in Captain's Cove. It references how many grabs were taken, the instrumentation used that was done randomly, none of which was done in the Birch case. But obviously VMRC in this process for the outfall permit, as it relates and is demonstrated in Captain's Cove, obviously VMRC participates in those permit processes. Obviously, they conduct shellfish harvesting studies. Obviously, they look at water quality. Obviously, they look at other uses. Well, sometime after, apparently, this case came before the commission the first time, there was a memorandum of understanding signed. Again, I'll supply copies of that, but I'm sure you've all seen it. The memorandum of understanding addresses this same problem that we are currently caught in, and that is all of the agencies working together so that these issues are adjudicated one time and the matters are properly before those stakeholders and those administrative agencies that are responsible for issuing these permits. That was not done in our case. Our case, the permit was issued, and now we're addressing the same issues over again in front of a different agency. The memorandum of understanding says that in these cases from here forward, and it's my interpretation of reading it, that if someone were to apply for this permit, be it even through the bulkhead at this point, VMRC, along with other state agencies, would be notified. They have a time frame in which to respond. If they want it to go to a public hearing or they're objectors and it goes to a public hearing. And then all of what you see in the Captain's Cove decision comes forth. What the commission is proposing, or what staff is proposing today, to have you deny this permit, essentially would invalidate your memorandum of understanding. Because what it would say is, okay, we're going to participate in that and we're going to conduct shellfish surveys and studies and all of these things. But guess what? If we don't agree with it and they issue the permit, we can still deny it if it has to go across the Baqueous grounds on water quality, shellfish, all the things that have previously been adjudicated. There's no difference there as far as the matter being adjudicated. The permit was issued by the Water Control Board for this effluent, and they already addressed the issues. Staff's report also speaks of that this should be denied because, again, it would take out of play, I guess, potentially leasable bottles. I submit to the commission that if this is going to be the stance here forth from this commission to assess whether a permit, be it for an outfall pipe, a bridge, dredging, a bulkhead, a dock, anything, that is going to take away potentially leasable bottoms, and you would have to deny the permit. I think it's a dangerous proposition for the commission to get into at this point. You can't cherry pick. You've got to show why. Why is this potentially prohibited area that could potentially take these leasable bottoms out of play any different from a dock or pier? Who's going to lease a bottom with a huge pier on it? You can't work it. It takes those out of play. So if this is the position that the commission is going to take, and obviously it's not because before you, when we first started the meeting, there were a whole slew on this agenda that did that very same thing. They went across state bottoms. They encroached on subaqueous grounds that otherwise now will not probably be leasable. If at a minimum that area that is supporting the dock or whatever, but practically all of it, because nobody's going to want to lease or try to work an oyster ground where there is a structure there or there's fiber optic lines beneath the bottom, any of it. This obviously has been a very interesting and long and drawn out case. Mr. Birch and Birchwood Motel have done everything that they can do to make sure that this facility works, and it works in relation to the concerns of the surrounding areas and stakeholders, that it works as evidenced by the permit being issued from Water Control Board, DSS, and DEQ all looked at it, that it works environmentally and that the water quality is good. But they have also done other things as far as moving their area to address specific concerns of Mr. Mason. They are willing, and I know that it was referenced, the white paper from Town of Chincoteague, where it talks about eventually them looking at alternatives and going to a public sewage system. I can tell you, if this commission wanted to make it a condition on a permit, Mr. Birch and Birchwood Motel would certainly agree that at any point the town of Chincoteague develops such a system for public sewer, they'll be the first to hook up to it and abandon this site. They, you know, this is by necessity. Given the opportunity to do something else or a public system, they will do it. And we would ask that the commission consider that in making this decision to address that concern and what the town of Chincoteague is trying to do. In closing, I will say this. This has been obviously a long and drawn-out case. It's been a very emotional case. But I think back to when I was a Marine police officer, and from time to time I would be called in here to sit as bailiff duty, if you will. And I used to listen to the proceedings of this commission. And I know the record of this commission. And I know its wonderful record in resolving issues of interest and applying equitable standards that accomplish the goals of all stakeholders, permittees, and people. I have seen this commission do that. I know they can do it. And all I submit to you is I hope that the procedural posture of this case and the way it has proceeded will not affect that good judgment that I have come to know for many, many years, and that you will honestly look at this and try to come to an equitable solution. We think it's there. We've made concessions, and we hope that you will consider all of this in making your decision. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ensley. Any questions of Mr. Ensley from the commission? Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ensley, you've argued that the impacts to specifically to shellfish, to water quality, to public health that have been discussed in the record have basically already been adjudicated by DEQ and or the Water Control Board. And yet 28.2.1205 requires that this commission consider in making decisions the public trust, reasonable and permissible uses of state waters, marine and fisheries resources of the Commonwealth, water quality, SAV, etc. Are you suggesting that we simply, with respect to those charges, defer to DEQ?
Well, absolutely not, and you should do that in state code. And I think you can do this in state code based upon the evidence that you have from DEQ, DSS, and the State Water Control Board on this effluent. They say it's safe. They say it goes, I think Mr. Dr. Kroonenberg said, it goes, it's top-notch as far as the effluent that it does discharge. When you are discussing water quality issues, shellfish harvesting, anytime you have another state agency that is required to do the same things, and you already have that in record and they have already done those studies, you have to use that as part of your decision in issuing the permit. If you were going to go against what they said, then logic would follow that you should have, if they use scientific data to say it's okay, then you should have the same on water quality to say why it's not. Not speculation, but actually this is why it won't work and will be harmful to water quality, shellfish harvesting, or public health. And again, I think this is clearly illustrated in the memorandum of understanding that this agency has agreed to be part of this process now with these other agencies. To advance what you're saying under 28.2.1201, it would be, again, say another applicant came in and they applied, water control contacted y'all, you said, we're opposing it, you go to a public hearing, you do the survey, the shellfish surveys, all the stuff that was done in Captain's Cove, and VMRC says, we don't agree with it, but they issue the permit anyways. Then, under 28.2.1201, the argument would be, well, we can still take another bite at the apple and the back end and deny the permit if it goes across subaqueous grounds, even though it's already been determined that water quality and shellfish harvesting is not an issue because the permit was issued for the effluent. So, you know, that is the exact principle for the Latin res judicata. The matter has been adjudicated. These issues have been adjudicated.
Thank you. Further questions? Mr. Schick, then Dr. McConaughey.
The determination of whether these grounds move from condemned to prohibited and whether that's okay or not okay isn't determined by, if I'm mistaken, by getting a permit from DEQ. That question is done here.
Well, actually, I believe the code section is 28.2. and I may be wrong, I think it's 807 that talks about reclassification of condemned shellfish area. And if you look in the public notice and everything for these permits, that's part of the reason for the public comment period. And I believe they address those code sections that talk about reclassification. That's why the commission now has a memorandum of understanding, but even during this permit should have participated in the public hearing to say why it should not fall under or should not be reclassified. But that wasn't done in this case. It remained silent until this point. The code section now before the commission is 282.1205, and that talks about encroachment upon sebaceous bottoms, not the reclassification. Nowhere in this permit that you would issue today will you see 28.2807 or anything that deals with the reclassification. All you will see referenced, in my understanding, is the encroachment issue upon, it's one of two boxes, I believe. It would either be encroachment or wetlands. This would be encroachment under 28.2 1205A, but it doesn't reference anything about reclassifications. That issue is normally held during the permit process from Virginia Department of Health when they're going to reclassify the area.
But this commission is charged with the duty of protecting the resource. The reclassification is part of that protection, even though that other agencies have a duty to do that also. Until something comes before this commission, we don't have the opportunity to protect that resource until it actually comes to this commission.
Well, and respectfully, somehow that was done in Captain's Cove because VMRC was very much a part of that process. They were very much involved in the survey for the random survey done for oysters in Captain's Cove. They were very much a part of its effect of the various stakeholders. So to say that they can't do anything until it becomes before them, that obviously, and I'm not, you know, I understand what you're saying, and I'm not trying to be contentious with you, but obviously if you read the Captain's Cove decision, that's not the case. The problem is there's now a memorandum of understanding to catch this hole, if you will. Mr. Birch fell in this hole and now is potentially going to be buried in it now that it's been closed up. He went and got the permits. They called for public hearing on the condemned areas. Mr. Mason, the commission, no one opposed. Now he's before you for his encroachment on sebaceous bottoms. But as far as water quality, shellfish harvest, its effect on shellfish harvest, as it relates to the prohibited area. Now, as far as the actual pipe goes, certainly this commission here today can address those concerns, but I believe in staff's report it clearly says that it will have little or no effect, the actual pipe, little or no effect on the sebaceous bottoms.
Dr. McConaughey?
Well, a similar question. Yeah, you're arguing that DEQ said that this is, effluent is top-notch, yet they're mandating that you go from a condemned area to a prohibited area. Obviously, the effluent, in their opinion, has an effect on the resources.
And my understanding of that is those prohibited areas are precautionary. They're not saying that shellfish in that area are going to change stature as far as their potential viability or whether they're going to have more disease to them. It's my understanding the prohibited area is a precautionary area in the event some extraordinary circumstance were to take place and the system had a malfunction or thing, which I think was all addressed in the initial hearing about its safeguards, and that's where I was talking about it. It appears to go above and beyond. It's my understanding the prohibited area is to capture if there were an event. So I don't think it is an issue of the water is more toxic within that magical blue area. I think it is, that is our safety zone in the event something were to happen. And I may be incorrect. I'm just stating what I think.
But the fact that we do still have this prohibited area suggests that they do consider that an impact is probable or possible.
Possible. I'm not sure what their probability standard is for that. I'll be honest with you, I don't know. But yes, because of that prohibited area, they are saying that it is probable. However, they issued the permit. They're saying by issuing the permit with this prohibited area that there's no effect on public health, there's no effect on water quality, and there's no effect on shellfish harvesting because they look at all these things as part of that permit, as is referenced in the Captain's Cove decision.
But they are saying...
Dr. McConaughey.
That, excuse me. They are saying that shellfish can't be consumed from there. It can't be relayed. Is that...
Correct.
So it is correct. Having an impact on the resources.
On the sebaceous bottom, yes, it is. But so is the pipe, or as I said earlier, a dock or anything else that would take potentially leasable ground out of play, if that is the concern of the commission, then they need to address it on a broad level, or maybe do it through regulation or code to say, from here out, if it's going to prohibit leasable grounds, we're not going to allow it. But to do it through a permit process individually, I don't think is the proper course under due process. To give people notice, don't even bother trying.
Mr. Tankard?
I have two questions. One, let me make sure I understand, Mr. Henley. You keep saying they have gotten the approval from DEQ, but as I understand it, Smithson from DEQ says they haven't gotten approval unless they get approval from us. Do you debate that, or is there something? Do you take issue with that?
I don't debate that. And our argument is what DEQ is saying is water quality, shellfish, public health, not a problem as long as you abide by these parameters. But obviously, you're still going to have to go across the aqueous bottoms to meet this threshold. So, again, our argument is, at this point, since the other issues have been adjudicated and addressed, the only issue properly before the commission is the actual pipe, the location of the actual pipe and its effect or encroachment on subaqueous ground.
Follow up, Mr. Tankard.
So, in other words, they really haven't gotten the application approved. But in your parallel to, and for the audience, I want to make sure everybody understands this, parallel with the... Captain's Cove. Captain's Cove lies directly on the water, but as I understand it, you can tell me yes or no. This is property, is sewage treatment will go across Main Street and out into public water. So we're talking about an upland discharge, effectively.
We have the engineer here, Ms. Hart. I believe she could answer any specific questions as to the dynamics of the engineering. Forthright, I'm not sure. I believe so, but I would hate to state on the record that the case and it not be the case. Ms. Hart?
Just a minute, please.
I'm sorry.
Ms. Hart, raise your right. Come up. You can answer a question, counsel. This gentleman will testify as well, Ms. Trensley?
Yes, sir.
Would you both raise your right hands? You solemnly swear the testimony that you give today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. On the record, please, Ms. Hart, state your name.
My name is Stacy Hart, 301 North Washington, Snow Hill, Maryland. The system that's designed, and I work with Don Hurl, and he actually did the permit application. The system that's designed is an above-ground wastewater treatment plant, just like all the others. The pipe does come underneath Main Street and go out into... the channel.
Can you come closer to the microphone, too, please? Thank you. Further?
Well, no, thank you.
Sir, did you have something that you want to add?
I just wanted to come up in case there was additional questions.
Mr. Ensley, any more while you've got them up here?
Yes, if you don't mind, sir. Ms. Hart, you said just like all the others, what others are you talking about? Have you personally been involved in other sites on Chincoteague Channel?
Yes. Yes, I worked with the Landmark Project, and Don and I worked on that design and permit as well. And all the wastewater treatment plants are above ground. They're basically put in a box with a fence around them for protection, and the treated effluent is done inside this container and then discharged out. Whether it's a small package system like for the Landmark or the Birchwood or a large municipal system.
Thank you. Mr. Tankard.
Have you seen any of these systems fail at any time?
No, actually, I've seen more failures on the side of, per se, lift stations. Some of the older areas may have lift stations that were installed without generators. And anymore, like this system has a generator as well as a holding tank so that if power goes out, it will still keep functioning. So a lot of times what happens is an older system, but never a wastewater treatment plant.
Dr. McConaughey?
Along those same lines,
Do you know what the failure rate is, say, at 1 year, 5 year, 10 year on any of these plants?
My name is Don Hurl. I'm with Environmental Systems Service, Culpeper. We are not only the technical consultant for this job, but we also operate water and wastewater treatment facilities around the state of Virginia and other states. As far as the failure rate, we operate at the present time about 35 wastewater treatment plants, ranging in size from 5,000 gallons per day to 2.5 million gallons per day. And we've been in this business for 30, I've been in this company for 36 years, and I don't know that we've ever had a catastrophic failure of any type. We have had, as it would happen with any kind of system, a failure, but there are safeguards built in. There's duplicate equipment. There are standby generators, so there are always safeguards to protect the environment in case there would be an equipment failure. But I've never seen a system just totally fail and raw sewage being dumped out into the river, with one exception, and that was in 1985. I believe it was a huge flood down on the James River, and the town of Buckhannon, their wastewater treatment plant was completely flooded and raw sewage went in the river. That's the only total failure I've ever seen. And I've worked in one fashion or another with about 450 wastewater treatment plants at last count. So,
Mr. Schutt?
So your definition of a total failure is any raw sewage, any untreated sewage,
If the treatment plant, no, I didn't say no matter how small. I said if a treatment plant totally failed and you had no alternative but to discharge raw sewage from the influent straight to the effluent. But there can be a pump station, as Stacy said, that might fail. There will be some raw sewage that discharges, and that occurs on a fairly regular basis, both the small systems and large municipal systems. It's just inherent with the type of plants.
Dr. McConaughey?
Just to follow up on that, this is a relatively small plant.
Yes.
Municipal probably has routine maintenance. What kind of maintenance does this require?
This treatment facility, I can speak for our company, and I can also speak as far as what the requirements are from the DEQ. The DEQ has specific requirements along with the permit for an operations and maintenance program, including a manual, be developed, and it must be followed, and that's a portion or a part of the permit. And so these facilities must be checked 7 days a week, certain water quality tests run on a daily basis, weekly basis, monthly basis, depending on the parameter, and the maintenance of the facility must be kept up and documented. And there are periodic inspections from the DEQ, and if there's anything that doesn't meet their standards, then the facility receives a violation or a warning letter and ultimately a notice of violation if it isn't corrected. So there is a good bit of oversight as far as the maintenance and upkeep of the systems. And again, most facilities, and certainly the facilities that we operate, we maintain spare parts and a full staff of licensed operators to run these facilities. We operate four facilities on the island of Chincoteague right now. And we've been there, I think, ranging from about 7 years to probably the most recent plan is about 3 years. And we've never had a failure at any of these facilities.
Mr. Robbins?
Mr. Chairman, I have one final engineering question, and that is, could a smaller development have been accommodated on site without the construction of a package plant? In other words, staff has spoken of the option of deep well injection techniques, et cetera. But are there other alternatives that could have been brought to bear on the site with a smaller development footprint and not having to construct a package plant?
No. The existing soils and the existing drain fields are old and require change in use, and the answer is no.
Thank you. Mr. McCluskey.
How many units are going to be tied to this system? Convert that to gallons per day.
The first phase to handle the first 28 units on site of the Birchwood project, and the owner of the property actually goes all the way to Willow Street to the back street, and there would be about another 70 or so back there. But that would the package is designed with two tiers. The first tier is 12.5 to do the 28 units in the second package for the back. In addition, some additional little bit of additional capacity has been built in to also handle the four units that are existing across the street, the waterfront units.
I think Mr. McCluskey had a follow-up.
Yes, sir.
This has been referred to as a treatment plant, and yet I've not heard you refer to exactly what is the grade of the influent. Is it fit to drink? Is it? And I have seen that demonstration years ago when an engineer showed it was clean and they drank it. Now, what is it between that clean and what is it today? What do y'all recommend?
Well, I guess the best way to kind of describe it is it would the water quality. If you running through one of the newer treatment plants versus, you know, what even 30 years ago, 35 years ago when I got into this business, everybody had secondary wastewater treatment requirements. That was the EPA standard in 1972 was established. Those secondary standards allowed 30 milligrams per liter of suspended solids and BOD, which is a measure of the organic content of the water. And if you could visibly see in secondary effluent, you know, there was a slight haziness to the water and that sort of thing. With the more stringent permits down through the years, the limits at this facility are 10 milligrams per liter BOD, 10 milligrams per liter suspended solids, and 3 milligrams per liter total nitrogen, and an E. coli or fecal coliform limit of 126, I believe. And with those standards, the water quality is considered fishable, swimmable. It's safe for body contact sports. So when you say, is it safe to drink, I don't know that I would drink any wastewater, but that's not to say that it's going to hurt anyone if you did drink it. I've seen people drink samples of wastewater myself, but I haven't drank any. And nor do I intend to, no matter what the quality.
This demonstration I witnessed, I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
But in order to impress the city council, the engineer did.
But I
think he survived, I'm not sure.
I will state, though, in some of the regulations or requirements of the DEQ, some of the standards are, in one case, close to 100 times more stringent for wastewater discharges than they are for drinking water standards. For zinc, in one case, the drinking water standard is 5 milligrams per liter. We have one particular plant where the zinc level at the effluent from the wastewater plant is 5 micrograms per liter. So just because it's drinking water, I have seen wastewater effluents with more stringent water quality standards than drinking water.
Dr. McConaughey?
What's the total outflow on these pipes?
The total outflow, the discharge flow rate?
Yeah.
This permit has two flow tiers. There's a 12,500 gallon per day flow tier, and the ultimate flow tier is for 35,000 gallons per day.
Sir, I have one question.
Yes, sir.
As far as you used the term catastrophic failure. Well, catastrophic is at the worst end of the spectrum. Are there any situations where these things can have moderate failures where the discharge that comes out, of course, is not raw sewage, but can still significantly impact the water quality of the surrounding ambient waters?
You could, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that you couldn't have a, you know, some type of partial failure that might impact the water, the discharge from the treatment plant. But typically those types of things are addressed very quickly. As I said, you have backup equipment, so any kind of failure, it would almost have to be a catastrophic type failure to create any kind of environmental impact. I mean, just a small failure wouldn't have any problem.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Mr. Inslee, is that?
Thank you. Commissioner Bowman. Just
you, one you, will, you will be afforded some time to rebut after.
I thank you. And Mr. McCleskey, I have been called upon by my clients to do a lot of things, but I don't think that I'm going to sample the affluent water. But I will if the commission absolutely requires it, just to show you how much I believe in this program.
You got a lot of years left to practice, Neil. I don't know how to get in that right.
I have that much faith in the commission.
Okay.
I would just reiterate to the commission that I know this has been a long process. I know it has had a lot of twists and turns in it, and I think it can be resolved today. I think it can be resolved equitably with all interested parties in mind, and I think the permit can be issued. A lot of the concerns that have been stressed by the commission, again, on water quality have already been addressed, obviously, as you've heard, through DEQ and their permit process, and they're very stringent standards in order to get one of these permits to discharge effluent. I would say one last thing in closing, and that is this really begs the question, had he been able, like the others on Chincoteague Channel, to go through the bulkhead, we wouldn't be before you. And that really is the crux of our argument. The only reason we are here is not water quality, is not shellfish harvest. Again, that has been adjudicated and determined in the permit process. The reason we are here is the actual pipe and its encroachment on Sebaqueous ground. And I wish that the commission would consider all of these arguments in making the decision. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And I will. I have copies of my exhibits that I referenced. I can either give one copy or
Mr. Grab. Okay. I think we'll be fine. Mr. Badger, either one.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Okay.
Before we go further to... Or is anyone else in support of this project?
My name is Ken Ballerini. I live at 3038
Ridge
Road,
Chincoteague,
Virginia.
Anyone else? I guess y'all are just indicating your support for the project, is what? Okay. Thank you.
Let the record reflect how many people.
If we can recognize now, we can.
Well, then I have to come up and everyone that supported the project, stand up, raise your right hand, and be sworn. Get this right. You solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God. If you're in support of it, everybody's in support. If you would just come up to the microphone, state your name, and just indicate your support of the project.
Barry Fisher, 7203 Fisher Drive, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Thank you. Mr. McGee.
Mike McGee, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Thank you.
Raymond Britton, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Lynn Ballerini, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Mary Lou Burke, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Thank you.
Ken Ballerini, Chincoteague, Virginia.
Gentlemen, I'm Jim Fries, 7444 East Side Road, Chincoteague, Virginia. I'd like to make a statement, if I may.
Sure.
Thank you. First thing, my friend Hank Badger made a very good presentation, but I take some issue with some parts of it. One of the things that I did want to point out, I don't take issue with, but I did want to point out that if we look at over there where 3 and 4, which where it says oysters, just to the left of those red circles. That, as I understand it, is Mr. Mason's ground. I also understand that there's to be no change in that ground. In other words, this thing goes through and it's approved, there will be no change whatsoever to his oyster grounds and what his rights are under that. Okay. Now, I mentioned to you that I have been and I am a member of the Chincoteague Town Council. I was also on the Wetlands Board when this first came up, and the Wetlands Board had to do more with the shore end of the pier rather than the rest of this. So I am intimately familiar with it. And I took pictures of this, quote, channel, unquote, and disagree vehemently that it's a channel where you put that bridge up. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there. The important thing is that the effluent that will be deposited in the water here is potable water. That is, it has the same characteristics as potable water. Now, why do I make that distinction? Because 1 inch of rain per acre is equivalent to 27,000 gallons. Now, phase one, as I understand it, is 12,500 gallons per day. Now, rainwater is, when I was a kid, we always considered it as very pure. It's not pure. Rainwater is acid rain. Rainwater, as I understand it, from listening to the various presentations up in Chincoteague and in our deliberations and going through and checking on the sewage question, we have listened to a lot of experts. I've heard that some of the estimates as to the potential damage from rainwater is as high as 39% of the total impurities in the water. Yet this is going to come through with the same or better standards than drinking water. So bearing that in mind, I would say that, you know, I would urge passage. Now, I mentioned that I was on the council because my friend Hank had mentioned that deep well injection in the deliberations that Chincoteague is making. And I can tell you, gentlemen, I'm one of those voting members. There will be no deep well injection on Chincoteague. When you deep well inject, you are putting wastewater into the aquifer. And once you contaminate that aquifer, you have no way whatsoever to get that contamination out. Now, Maryland does not allow deep well injection. Delaware does not allow deep well injection. And as far as Redmond Johnson is concerned, they did not, in my opinion, do original investigation, but rather took three or four surveys or reports that had been done before and just summarized them again, and that was the extent of it. And I can assure you that it is not a foregone conclusion on Chincoteague. As a matter of fact, this week, I believe it's Thursday, there's going to be another hearing with Redmond Johnson there. So please don't expect Chincoteague to do deep well injection or to be against the Birchwood project. And I'd be willing to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I'm Donald Birch of Chincoteague.
Have you been sworn, Mr. Birch?
Sir?
Have you been sworn?
Yeah.
Did you swear? Okay.
Yeah.
Proceed.
I'm looking at this, I mean, just like the lawyer said, I try to do everything I can to please you people. I don't want people. Well, I've lived in Chincoteague 62 years. My dad died 89, you know. And this piece of grain here, I mean, if you're all concerned about that piece of grain somebody's going to lease, this part on the right, that's owned by the tank. It's nothing down but mud. There's not a shell in it. I mean, it might be one or two, you know what I'm saying? But if you're concerned about that, I'll lease the whole area. And if you want, you know, that's just like I'm not going nowhere. And I don't think my kids aren't either. You know, that's all I got. You know, I'd like you to consider what this is. You know, I mean, you've got four plants on there now. You've got two more that's never hooked up yet that they've got permits for. And I just can't understand how come all of a sudden, and I'm, even though I've tried to do everything that you all tell me that I needed to do, or all agencies that told me to do, I don't know what more I can do. You know, I mean, this has been going on pushing 5 years for me, and it's just, I'll just leave it to you all.
Any questions for Mr. Birch? Thank you. Before we go any further into the opposition, counsel has suggested, is DEQ here represented, Department of Environmental Quality? Could you come forward, sir? Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, except your God. Can you state your name for the record, please?
My name is James McConathy. I'm the water permit manager in the Tidewater Regional Office of the Department of Environmental Quality.
Can you please explain to the commission what the status of this permit is at this point? You've heard what's been said back and forth. Can you kind of shed a little light on exactly where we are today from DEQ's perspective?
The permit was issued. The agreement in regard to the issuance of the permit was that in order to have a complete application, there would be an agreement from the applicant that the discharge line would be extended into water at least 1 meter deep. And that is a condition upon which we will issue a certificate to construct, certificate to operate, in regard to the construction of the treatment facility prior to it beginning operation and discharging.
Questions of the commission? Gentleman from DEQ, Dr. McConaughey.
Council indicated you guys had done a lot of scientific testing. Could you summarize that for us?
I don't think we have done any scientific testing. I think the testing that was done by the Division of Shellfish Sanitation. The coordination that was done in regard to the decision as to where the discharge should be located was done in coordination and cooperation with the Division of Shellfish Sanitation. That agency makes the decision in regard to areas of condemnation and prohibition. DEQ does not make those decisions.
Further questions, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Mr. Schick.
So as far as DEQ goes, the effluency and its effect on shellfish and on the resource that this commission is charged with is not part of your bailiwick as far as that goes.
Yes, sir, that's correct. We don't have the expertise to make decisions and in regard to the impact of shellfish. We don't have decisions or expertise in regard to making decisions in connection with the size of a condemnation area or a prohibition area. We work in coordination with the Division of Shellfish Sanitation and the Virginia Marine Resources Commission in dealing with those sort of decisions. And, in fact, our regulations require us to do that before we make a decision in regard to a permit that deals with impacts to shellfish.
Thank you.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard.
And let me, I'm a slow learner perhaps. Mr. Smithson says that, as you mentioned, 1 meter over the end of the pipe at all times, and that VMRC and all other affected agencies approve the location. Is that how you understand it as well?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We may have further questions.
Yes,
sir. Yeah. Is Dr. Krenenberg's here? Would you come forward, Doctor? Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Right in. Tell me swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
You state your name, please, and who you represent.
My name is Robert E. Krenenberg. I'm the director of the Division of Shellfish Sanitation and Health Department.
Dr. Krenenberg, you've heard some questions from members of the commission pertaining to the studies that are done, impact on shellfish. Can you comment on that, please?
Yes. I would like to say a couple of things first, just to set the record straight.
Please do.
Number one, shellfish sanitation does not issue permits. I just want to say that. Number two, in regards to the effluent, apparently said that it was top-notch. Ultraviolet treatment of effluent is an excellent way to go. It's one of the best, probably the best. I'm not an engineer. We like to see that over chlorination, but we still have concerns about it. When you look at discharges, ultraviolet disinfected discharges nationwide, some viruses still come through. Now, what would happen in this case, I can't say. We don't we don't look at it that way. We're not qualified to look at it that way. We take U.S. Food and Drug Administration's recommendations and requirements, and they indicate that viruses do come through to a considerably lesser degree than when you chlorinate it, but they still come through. And we are most concerned about norovirus, which is episodic. Somebody has to be sick with norovirus. That's that cruise ship virus that's so hard to get rid of. That can come through a system that is treated with ultraviolet disinfection. So that cuts right to the chase of what our concern is. It's not heavy metals. It's not really toxic substances. It's not so much bacteria, because they are killed, especially with ultraviolet. But it's these really highly resistant viruses. That's why we have a prohibited area surrounding the alcohol, and FDA requires it to, because they are man-made facilities and they can have they can fail to a certain extent. What that probability is, I don't know. I really can't say, but we do have a concern about the safety of the effluent. That's as much as I can say about that. So I just wanted to set those two things straight. We have, when we classify growing waters as to whether the water should be restricted or prohibited or approved around a discharge, we use a mathematical model that runs on a computer and uses depth and tidal current data that we get from readily available sources. The model assumes that a channel is rectangular with some bottom roughness. So it's a theoretical model, and it looks at dilution and dispersion, the movement of water by current. And so we've been using that. VIMS developed it. Researchers at VIMS developed it, and we've been using it for a number of years. We wanted to test how well that worked by doing some dye work. And so in April of 2006, we worked with FDA. They showed us how to do dye studies, and we discharged in the area of landmark properties a tremendous amount of dye, and then went up here and ran the boat with the fluorometer running in it to look at concentrations. And basically it shows on flood tide that you have higher concentrations there. What we found downstream that is sort of pertinent to what's going on here is that the dye initially mixes in an area, and then as it is carried, it really doesn't change in concentration very quickly. So we found relatively high concentrations all the way down here on ebb tide, well into ebb tide after the discharge. Now they are well below of concern for harvest, but they're still there. It still takes a while for that to really dilute. So we were interested in what would happen in this situation of the Birchwood Motel. I called Mr. Birch and asked him for approval to discharge from shore. He was very kind to let us do that. And so we came with FDA again in October of 2007. And we were... I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. We injected right there. We were primarily concerned about what would happen in this area behind these islands. We just didn't know how that would mix. It's deeper here to the northwest, but in this direction, we just didn't know what would happen. So we injected very late in flood tide, and then last 15 minutes of flood, and then throughout all of ebb tide until it just started to flood again. And what we found was that the dye moves along, not much water. This area shallows up as the tide drops, and a tremendous amount of the water exits out through here. Apparently some comes on out and down. So we could not get into this area right here with our fluorometer. It was just too shallow, even with an electric motor and a relatively small boat. But we could get into this area and look, and the highest concentration of dye that we found was 77.8 parts per billion, and you look at what the concentration is and the amount of dye that you release, and what we're looking for is dilution, how much dilution that we would get in the area is really what we were looking for. And we found sufficient dilution in this area to meet restricted, not prohibited, but restricted in this area if it were UV treated, ultraviolet treated. So in this instance, even this is well below where what we would have prohibited. It's inside the restricted area, but it did indicate that if the discharge were on shore, that at least out here we would be within requirements that we want to be. We'd be adequately diluted for a restricted area. We don't really know where it would change over from a prohibited concentration to a lesser restricted concentration in this area, because we just could not get in there. And we looked farther downstream, and we found considerable dilution in that area. It's still carried down, but that's an order of magnitude less, 3.8, 7.1. This the highest concentration that we found in this area was 77, almost 78. So it's diluted about 10 times from here till you get down into this area. So just to summarize our work, we used this mathematical model. That model does not work very well up in this area because we're looking at a theoretical rectangle, a rectangular channel, and that's just not what's here. So we don't really know. The dye certainly, the water hugs on ebb tide. It hugs right through that low area, whether you want to call it a channel or not. It follows that area. And I think that's all we'll say at this point.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question. It appears from your study that the dye might move considerable distances in the tidal waters after being released. And given that your lingering concern is not so much related to bacteria, but to perhaps the viral transmission, is there still a concern, or is there a positive probability that if, for example, a virus were transmitted through or released in the effluent, that could be transmitted to shellfish resources adjacent to that lease? In other words, the protest, as you're aware from the discussion, comes from a leaseholder that has a leasehold that's effectively virtually immediately adjacent to Mr. Birch's lease or to the proposed condemned area. So if a virus were released through the discharge effluent and made its way into the shellfish resources on that lease, is there some probability that could occur?
Yes, there is. We are just, VIMS is just beginning to develop the analytical technique to look at these viruses, noroviruses, and we are finding them. We're looking in Hampton Roads, and we are finding them considerable distance from very large, those HRSD discharges. But we are surprised at how far they are moving in Hampton Roads and being taken up by clams. The transit time is very short, of course, from a discharge here to get down to here is a very short time period. Those viruses survive for maybe a month, maybe not quite that long in such shallow water. So we are classifying upon using criteria that we currently have. I really can't say what will happen nationally dealing with these viruses, but I think it's an issue that is going to come to the fore in the future.
Thank you.
Dr. Kronenberg, if a scenario like that happened, regardless of whether it's in Chincoteague or whether it's in Hampton Roads or whatever, and you go to a certain location that your field technicians have determined that is impacted by norovirus, what would be the normal procedure of the Virginia Department of Health at that time, including what would you do and what type of durations are we talking about and exactly what would be the ramifications?
Well, we're not there yet to be able to say. This is a brand new situation. The concern, once you find a pathogen in shellfish growing waters, the national program is set up to be very concerned about that. We don't actually look for pathogens. We use fecal coliforms, which for the most part are just an indicator. We are not really out there looking for pathogenic organisms. FDA, Florida had salmonella in some of their growing waters, which is a bacteria, may well have come from gulls. FDA required that area to be closed for quite some time. Now, I don't know whether that was prohibited or not. Probably not, just restricted. We have found norovirus in Hampton Roads, and the data is so preliminary, and we know so little about where it is that at this, and we have such a long history of relay without having a problem, that at this point we're not taking any action. But there is the potential for for not allowing relay until that data. Well, I think VIMS is really what's happening is Dr. Cater at VIMS is looking, trying to determine how long it takes for norovirus to be decorated from clams and oysters. Oysters certainly. And so ideally we would like to be able to take that data and then apply it to a situation, find out how long it takes to depurate, to purge themselves of the viruses, and then use that in how long we would keep an area closed. I'm not answering your question directly because we don't have any answers yet, and I wouldn't want to go on record with something that I just can't answer.
Mr. McCluskey, then Mr. Schick.
Yeah, Doctor, has your agency done any studies on stormwater runoff in the tidewater area of the state of Virginia, really?
Some. I mean, our mandate really is to protect public health. It's not, and inherent in that is looking at how water quality changes with runoff. We have, we do very little actually following up right after storms to see what's happening. We use a different sampling approach. But we have certainly looked at our data around government ditch, which is that the large drainage area coming in around the James River Ridge, Monitor Merrimack on the North Shore. And we see, you know, elevated fecal coliforms coming into that area after rains. We know that rainfall causes elevated fecals, elevated, you know, you get runoff, and some areas are affected by more. So I'm not sure if I'm answering your question or not, or what you would really like to
hear. What I'd like to hear is you know, the cities and towns are rightfully so requiring you not to cut weeds down or anything, and not be careful with manure from dogs and cats, and
right.
Yet they'll come right beside you and put in a stormwater runoff without the benefit of a BMP, and a BMP is pretty well accepted as one method to control stormwater runoff. As you think your agency might sort of be an advocate, push for BMPs. Make the developers put them there, make the cities put them.
Well, we can't do that. It's outside our mandate. I mean, we were told many years ago really to stay within what we can do. And what we can do is say, this is what we see happening, and this is what shellfish sanitation would have to do. We'd have to either restrict the area or prohibit the area. But we can't be an advocate. But
I wish you could.
Mr. Schick.
Getting back to, you had stated that at the beginning of your presentation that you all don't approve permits.
Correct.
Per se. You basically provide information through comment. And basically your comment through this mathematical model shows that this area would change from a restricted or condemned area to a prohibited area.
Right.
It's not a recommendation to do so. It's just
right.
Providing information
yes.
for us, and I guess I don't know if
and
any
DEQ.
Other and to make permit approvals or denials.
Right. If the discharge is near shore, we would have to have certain size condemnation. If it were offshore, we would have to have we could have a smaller.
Right. In general, it's your view as far as recommendations not to move from prohibited or restricted areas to prohibited areas if it can be helped.
Well, again, we try to stay away from having an opinion. I mean, we're on the cutting edge of all these things. We really can't. I mean, we're on the razor's edge. We can't be for one side or the other. We just have to say what we would do.
What you have to do if we approved.
Yes.
The permit.
Yes.
Okay.
Dr. McConaughey?
Just to make sure I'm clear, you guys are really looking at bacteria and viruses. You don't really take into consideration VOD, nitrogen, and those types of things?
Correct.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Sure. Dr. Wesson here. Come forward. Doc, you've been previously sworn.
Yep.
You were here this morning. There's a lot of people.
Yep.
Okay.
Listen to all that.
Can you tell me a little bit about your sampling that you undertook at that location?
Can you get those? Comparing Captain's Cove to this survey, there are apples and oranges. Captain's Cove was we didn't have an MOU back then, and we were requested by DEQ to come up and do that survey. It was all subtitle. Where we could use a big boat, and we had it in that situation. You have to do a blind random survey where you go to the computer and you pick samples.
I want the one that shows the land. Going back to where it's had the Mason line and everything.
Oh, okay.
In this situation,
yeah,
that's it. This is not a good low tide like where we went out and looked. I mean, on seaside, on the coastal bays, you have to go out to the areas when you do a survey, and you have to look at it low tide because, I mean, the main thing I was going out to look was for oysters and then secondarily do the clams. And what you can see here is you have different habitat types. And so all I was trying to do was get a representative density in an oyster reef based on, you can look out there, you can see there's orchard reefs here, there's orchard reefs here, and I had these orchard reefs that were in between, so that was a nice area to check that wasn't impacting anybody, it was on unassigned ground. So I wanted a density on orchard reefs. And then I wanted a density on all this area out here. It's very consistent. It's about a little bit more than knee-deep up to, you walk out of the water, and it's sandy mud. It had a lot of eelgrass. The mud was kind of a mount that it would come up to your ankles when you were walking in it. So I just wanted to, that's the subtype of habitat, and that's where the clams would be. So all I did is took three or four grabs on a representative orchard reef, and the amount in which reported in the report that I gave to them was just a density on an orchard reef, which varied, I think it was 400 to 800 per meter.
And what does that indicate to you?
That's a very high population, but I didn't go to the extent, it would have been a very exhaustive survey to actually determine the acreage of all of these little hills and to tell you exactly how many orchards out there. The report didn't say that. It said the density of orchards on an average orchard reef. And then the same thing for the clams. It was the density of clams in the normal subtidal clam habitat that was there, which was everything. And it is random. When you can see the ground, you have to just throw your little sampling device out, and where it falls. That's random. And so the density within the subtidal area was the clams, which was about two clams every time you had a meter's worth. So, and again, I didn't go figure out how many square meters there were in that combination area. I gave you the density of that area.
But are you comfortable with the sample that you took is representative of what was present there?
Absolutely. We do this every day on CSUN.
And I don't believe, if I ask you for the record, what's your position here as a DMRC, and how long have you been doing what you've been doing?
Department of Conservation and Replenishment. Been here for 15 years. We've been doing surveys all over the state of orchard grounds, and this is a routine way that we do intertidal surveys on seaside.
Any questions of Dr. Wesson of the Commission? Mr. Tankard?
So let me make sure I'm straight here. There is a viable shellfish opportunity in this location.
Well, there's a viable shellfish population. It's absolutely very, very healthy. And these areas wax and wane. I mean, I imagine the clams are there all the time. Mm-hmm. But the orchards come and go. I mean, but right now, there's a lot of them out there.
So you call the opportunity high?
The density right now is, of market orchards especially, was higher than normal. We're in a good phase right now out in this area. And people have noticed that on Chincoteague, the Chincoteague area kind of all around, but there's more market orchards now than we've seen in several years. So it wasn't out of the ordinary for the Chincoteague area.
Further questions? Mr. Schick?
As far as the other areas that are concerned to the left of Mr. Burgess, that area there, you said you also found some clams in that area.
No, I didn't go over that.
You didn't go over
that. I just looked at two habitat types, and that habitat type that I looked at in here,
on
the same
side.
Habitat type is
right.
Here. We could have walked all over those areas, but there's no sense in looking at these areas. These are just shell hash that protects these back reefs, and that's the reefs that develop in these areas are kind of in the slough behind a hill that gets in front of them.
In your consideration of the future, since you are aware of new technologies coming along, those areas could be good habitat for future oyster clam production, aquaculture, things like that.
It would have to be relayed,
in a really relayed situation, where if it was prohibited, that would be forever gone, and that future opportunity is also gone.
Further questions, Dr. McConaughey?
We've heard relaying techniques are risky economically. What is your opinion in terms of
It's for orchards. There's actually orchards being relayed from right here in the past couple of years, and it kind of is all market driven. And if you have a number of market orchards like you do right now, where they're very easy to collect at low tide, and you simply have to move them in a cage over to a clean area for 15 days, it's not very hard to do that, and it's not very expensive. Now, if you were going to relay clams here, it probably would be. You can go get an aquaculture clam from a clean area, much easier. But for orchards, certainly you can do relay.
Further questions? Mr. Tankard?
And just so in the testimony we heard last time, Mr. Mike McGee testified with support of 10 other watermen that the very area in question was not productive for shellfish at all. You say that's not the case now.
And that could very likely have been the case in another time when it was looked at. But they're there at this point.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, Dr. Wesson.
Sure.
Is there anyone here in opposition to the project? Mr. Mason, since it appears that you and Ms. Mason are the leading opponents, would you like to speak before this gentleman in front? Okay, that'll be fine. Will you all do me a favor? All three stand up, if you would, right now, and we'll get you sworn in. Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Thank you. Come forward, Ms. Mason.
I'm Donna Mason. I'm from Chincoteague. I'm married to Tommy Mason, and for the interest of full disclosure, Donnie Birch is my cousin. So I would like to state that we are not against him building condos. We are against the effluent going into the channel. That's the main thing we're against. I'd also question why, if this waterway, which is the main waterway surrounding Chincoteague, is not used for recreational purposes, why was a 700-foot fishing and crabbing pier built out into this channel? What was the purpose of the pier if you weren't going to use it for recreational purposes? Just a question. By no means am I any kind of scientific person. I just have some information here that I'd like to share. There was a document that was referenced in Judge Tyler's decision, and he said he couldn't read it. So with your permission, I would like to read this. And if anyone would like a copy of this.
We'll enter it into the record after you read it.
Okay. It's from the Department of Health. And it was done in 2005, November 22nd, 2005. So the problem with the viruses and things like that has been ongoing. It's not a new thing, but certainly it's of more concern because environmental issues are of more concern. This was from Robert Strobe, and it was written to Robert Bumley. Anyway, the Department of Health is becoming concerned about the proliferation of wastewater treatment facility, WWTF, discharges from Chincoteague into Chincoteague Channel and their potential impact upon the safety of shellfish grown in nearby waters. Chincoteague is experiencing tremendous growth in both the valuable real estate and the lucrative shellfish industry markets. Since WWTF's discharge viruses and since shellfish concentrate viruses from the overlying water, the public health concerns are particularly acute around these discharges. The department currently uses a generic mathematical model to determine the size of shellfish buffer closure zones around WWTF discharges. While a modeling approach has certain valid applications, the degree of development and number of discharges into the waters around Chincoteague requires more advanced modeling than that currently used in VDH. In addition, the ability of small privately run sewage treatment facilities to consistently remove enteric viruses is uncertain and calls into question the concept of relying solely upon models to establish shellfish buffer zones in the area. Pathogenic human enteric viruses are the contaminant of primary concern, yet the capabilities for assessing viral concerns are limited. Chincoteague is probably representative of shellfish-related problems that will occur in the future as the nearshore areas of the Chesapeake Bay are developed. The shellfish aquaculture industry is growing in Virginia, and the areas of choice are nearshore. In many cases, a regional approach to dealing with sewage discharges would be helpful. The current practice by developers is to try to locate a WWTF discharge into an existing shellfish closure so that they can more easily obtain an MPDES discharge permit from DEQ. However, in many areas, a regional approach to sewage collection into a larger quasi-governmental run facility that can provide more reliable treatment with an offshore discharge that will provide better dilution needs consideration. And I will give that to you when I'm done. We're talking about a norovirus, and most of us probably are more familiar with Norwalk, what they talk about on cruise ships and stuff like that. This is the virus we're talking about. And we've all heard the horror stories there. It would only take one of those on Chincoteague to destroy the two industries that are left, which is tourism and the oyster and clam aquaculture and oysters growing in the wild. Clams growing in the wild is kind of going away, but aquaculture clamming is doing very well. But in any case, that would destroy the habitat, that would destroy the businesses totally. And I've lived on Chincoteague all my life and on this Chincoteague channel all my life. So it's very personal to me. Foodborne transmission. Theoretically, any food item can potentially be infected with NLVs through fecal contamination. However, certain foods are implicated more often than others in outbreaks of NLV gastroenteritis. Shellfish, e.g. oysters or clams, tend to concentrate in their tissues NLVs that contaminate the waters from which they are harvested. And even harvests meeting bacteriological standards of hygiene can contain NLVs. In addition, cooking, steaming might not completely inactivate NLVs. Until reliable indicators for routine monitoring of viral contamination of harvest waters and shellfish are available, measures to prevent the contamination of harvest waters with human waste, i.e. surveillance of the shoreline for potential sources of fecal contamination and restricting boaters from dumping waste overboard, are probably a useful means of preventing shellfish-associated NLV gastroenteritis outbreaks.
What is the origin of that document?
That is from, from a June 1st, 2001 morbidity and mortality weekly report from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Tankard?
Ms. Mason, you mentioned tourism and the effects that a virus might have on tourism. Can you give us your background with relation to tourism, how you can make that judgment and how you come to that conclusion?
Well, my daddy's the original Mr. Whippy, and anybody knows anything about Chincoteague is familiar with the ice cream. So I grew up in the ice cream industry, which was tourism, and have actually owned a hotel for the last 21 years. And we are approximately a quarter of a mile from where this discharge would be, our hotel.
Further questions? Ms. Mason, do you hold that lease with your husband?
Yes. Well, actually, it's in his name, but it was originally my father's.
Who would be more likely to know the activity on that lease?
He would.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
You've been previously sworn. State your name, please.
Yeah. I don't know where to start. There's been so much going on, but I'll try. Start with, I want to go over this summary that Judge Tyler presented.
You can state your name for the record, please, Mr.
Tom
Mason.
Mason. I'm the owner of Mason Seafood and the Waterside Motor Inn with my wife. I want to dispute a few things. One thing here that Mike McGee, seafood dealer on Chincoteague, stated, or Judge Tyler wrote in here, that the water around Chincoteague is polluted. That is not true. The water is not polluted around Chincoteague. And he claimed that, Mr. McGee claimed that it's not financially feasible to move oysters or move seafood. I can dispute that. Or Mr. Birch's lawyer, I have the permits from 2007 where I moved oysters. I got the amount of moves, and if you want to know the money-wise, I can tell you what I made.
No, I don't want to know the money. I want to know how many you moved. What did you move?
I moved around 75 bushel. 75 bushel. You can talk about anywhere from $50 to $60. I done it with the help.
A bushel?
A bushel, yes. I've done it with the help of Mr. Ricky Howard, who owns Ricky's Seafood on Chincoteague. Matter of fact, I sold him some of the oysters back. They were fat. They were beautiful oysters. I had no death rate. I moved them from, if I moved them. Hank, if you put up, it shows my lease and across the Black Mountains where I have the clam lease. But if you need a copy of this, of my permits for 2007 and what I moved, I can give you that. I'm sure you probably have it somewhere. And it shows, that's fine. Okay, if you notice across the channel from here right there, I have leases where Hank is pointing out. That's where I moved them. I moved them from the, you know, condemned area across. I done it in October.
Which condemned area?
The condemned area that I own.
Adjacent to where we just saw on the slide, adjacent to where the outfall would be?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay,
yeah,
thank
I moved
you.
It from there across the channel to purge them for 15 days. I done this in October. Dr. Kronenberg and Keith Skiles was doing the dye test at that time, and Dr. Kronenberg come up and said, you got a lot of orchards here on this lease, which it is, and Dr. Weston confirmed it. And I have a lease to take them up for this year, 2008. I'm going to do it right after this week, after we get done with the tourist business. And there is quite a few oysters there. I mean, I'd say a lot. The copy my wife just read to you that Judge Tyler says wasn't legible, I think she'd probably give it to you or not, but we'll give it to you. She read it in full. And Judge Tyler stated in here that I didn't know if I was going to move oysters from this lease or use this lease. Well, why in the world would I have the lease and pay the MRC taxes if I wasn't going to use it? I had all intentions in the world, and I think I stated it here, that I was going to move them. And I did. I did move them. So that was wrong. And another thing that upset me, one of the members, your associate members here, commission members, made a statement about if one more person in the state of Virginia gets sick by eating Virginia oysters, we're going to go on the same list that Louisiana or the Gulf Coast states is. And Judge Tyler made a thing, said whatever that means. Well, if he didn't know what it meant, he should have called Shellfish Sanitation. And I'll tell you what it means. If Virginia gets one more person gets sick with oysters eaten in Virginia, you'll not be able to ship no oysters in California whatsoever. Forever. We'll be off the list. I'm trying to hurry up to the news. Another thing, his last words, he said, dilution is the solution. I've talked to some people in the health department. That is not true. That's an old tale that the old folks used to say. That is entirely wrong. I mean, you put enough stuff in a body of water and a swimming pool, it's going to get condemned. I have something here from, it's a March draft. It's from the Virginia Institute of Marine Science. It was written by Mike Oceanly and Mark Lundbach. Just read you one little sentence here. It's talking about clean water. There is no single factor on which shellfish aquaculture is more important than excellent quality, water quality. Excellent water quality. You know how big shellfish we're talking probably now, anywhere with the aquaculture plans, anywhere from $40 to $50 million a year, and it's growing.
Mr. Mason, can you do me a favor? Council's reminded me, once you have basically read that documented evidence, it's appropriate that I accept the document into the record, so I need that letter now, if I could, please, as well as what you just read, Mr. Mason, if possible.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph.
U.S.
And you could have this, this Hank, because this is an old
report. Mr. Commissioner, she also read a report from a federal paper.
Report from Dems.
The other document that you have from Department of Health and Human Services?
Yeah, Health and Human Services.
As you know, this supposed to come up in June, and it was postponed. Is it all right if I talk while he's handling?
Yes, sir. Please, okay. I'm listening. I'm just
You know, Accomack County is trying to come up with a sewage proposal thing for Nancock and Accomack and Parsley. Probably the people on the Eastern Shore know about it, and
They want to hook the Akamai, Parsley, into Nancock's sewage system, which goes into Nancock Creek. This was in the Eastern Shore News. It says they want to take the sewage system, remove it from Nancock Creek by 2012 in land application. Instead of running it into the water, they want to take it out, which is a good thing. Another report I got out of Virginia Pilot, you probably all can see, they said 85% of Virginia waters has at least one pollutant in it. And another thing, but they're talking about these failures of the treatment plants. This was June 20 of this year. This is Salisbury, Maryland. The sewage spill is the second in 3 days in Salisbury.
Mr. Mason, all due respect, I think to keep the record as clean as I'd like, I think maybe the Salisbury, I know where you're leading, okay. But I think we'd be best leaving that alone.
That's fine. I was just telling you about this, you know.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I got a little this here. I'm going to put, but like I said, the day that Dr. Kruenberg was doing the dye test, I was there and another fellow taking Arthur's up. And the dye test did go all over the water, all past my grind. I think Mr. Biden had a retired waterman call you that was really concerned what was going on. He can, you know, talk about that. I go down to North Carolina quite often, and they're building like an 84-unit complex down there on the ocean. And I went there, I was concerned because all the wastewater things going on all over the country, especially home. I said, where are you running the water? You run it into the ocean or you run it into Bogue Sound? They said, no, we're not allowed to run the water in, you know, this treated water. They're doing deep well injection. And they don't have a whole lot of room, but they're putting a deep well injection in on this island. I'm sure you know where it's at.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, Mr. Jimmy Kelly, which I'm sure Mr. Tanker knows, Exmoor is thinking about putting a treatment plant in or was and running into a creek on the seaside. And Mr. Kelly was telling me he was to this meet. And he asked the engineer, said, what is the failure rate? He wouldn't answer. He said, well, is it 10% or 20%? So didn't answer. He said, well, is it 20 to 50? He never did answer on the failure rate. So that's kind of strange. Another thing, I think the DEQ people here today, I was told by DEQ, I think this was Rick Weeks, the deputy director, that now, if there is a shellfish leases in the area where they want to run these treatment plants, they cannot do it. And is that true? If there's approved shellfish leases in the area, you can't run treatment plants in this area?
Yeah, you can't, okay. Unfortunately.
Okay. I'm not against Mr. Birch building condos. I mean, there's other ways to put treatment in, like the deep well injection. And Mr. Freeze said you can't do it because you're going to hit an aquifer. Well, in Santa Bella Island, Florida, they have deep well injection on Santa Bella Island. They inject the treated sewage down 3,000 feet in the grind. In 800 feet down in the grind, they draw the water out of there. And you know, Shingatiga, they put a deep well injection down 2,000 feet or just a few feet, they're going to hit a saltwater aquifer, and you're not going to drink no salt water. And another thing, when I built my motel, it's over on the water, on Shingatiga Channel, all of my septic is pumped across the street. I had to tie up five building lots to do it. Now, when I built it, I asked for like 60 units. I couldn't get it. I had to cut back to 45 motel rooms. But I had to tie up five building lots. So, I mean, maybe Mr. Birch needs to cut back, or maybe he needs to go deep well injection. I'm not against him. I have nothing against him. But I the leases you see across the channel on this side over here, right here. We harvest 20 million clams off there yesterday. I got a crew over there today. I probably harvest 30 million over there. I got a million clams there. Plus, over on the same side, I have the Iacensis project that, you know, through the Virginia Tuberine Science, I got 100,000 Iacensis horses over there. Now, we talked about it before. When the wind blows out of the northeast or what have you, who knows if it's not going to blow some of that sewage over where I got all these clams and oysters that I'm harvesting now that is legal to do, that a virus don't get in it. So that's my concern is somebody getting sick, and like I said, like my wife said, if somebody would get sick,
from eating an oyster or clam or get sick from swimming in the water without some kind of disease in it. It would be catered bar to door for Shingity because the seafood business and the tourist business is about all we got left.
Thank you, Mr. Mason. Any questions, Mr. Mason? Mr. Schick?
One quick thing. Talking about the relay business, and isn't it, how much percentage of, I'll say, your gross is taken up by the process of relaying? Is it a very small amount?
Yeah, it's a very small amount. I do some of it myself, and I have one person help me, so it's a very, very small percentage.
So really? Most of the labor is getting the oyster up to begin with, putting it back down and leaving
putting it over. Getting them up and putting them in baskets is the labor, carrying them across the channel and putting them in cages.
And you got to pick them up and put them in baskets anyway.
Yeah.
Whether you were harvesting them or relaying them.
Okay.
Other questions? Thank you, Mr. Mason.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
My name is Carl Meissner, 3166 Main Street, Shinkatig, and my main concern is health and aquaculture. I live approximately half a mile south of the proposed pipeline. I have three small plots where I raise oysters and clams. This is my first year in oysters. I have one plot that's you would call it I have two plots that are on the restricted ground and one that I'm not supposed to dig at all without relaying them, okay, which is right in front of my house, so I'm on the east side of the channel. But I will say this, there's a very prolific stock of clams and oysters on our side of the channel, and I'm just afraid of, as a lot of people are, that of a future spillage or malfunction in the system. And I was hoping we could see a vertical pipe as opposed to a horizontal pipe, meaning deep injection.
Yes, sir. Any questions, Mr. Meissner? Thank you, sir. Anyone else opposed to the project? All right. Mr. Inslee or Mr. Martingale? Couple minutes to wrap up, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate your opportunity for me to do rebuttal here. First, I guess I need clarification. I think I asked earlier about the exhibits that I referenced in my initial presentation about whether I needed to submit them to the commission. I believe you said through Bob Grab, would it be appropriate based on, I believe, what you just relayed to the objectors for me to admit those into evidence?
Oh, absolutely.
No?
We want to perfect the record. Yes, sir.
I have copies, probably extras, for everyone on the commission. The only one in there that was not referenced in my initial arguments were the overlay that we did of the samples taken from the GPS coordinates that Dr. Wesson did in relation to the map that was supplied by Department of Health that showed the shaded blue area for the prohibited area.
Okay.
And I appreciate you accepting those.
Yes, sir.
First of all, just for clarification, and I apologize to Dr. Prunenberg. I certainly wasn't trying to put words in his mouth. I was paraphrasing, if you will, with my comment about top-notch, and I do apologize for that. I certainly didn't mean to use those as his exact words, but to the effect that he, as he stated, with this technology and this system, it is a good system. We are still where we were previously to the opposition's comments, in that even though DSS says they don't issue permits and DEQ said they didn't issue the permit, a permit was issued to discharge effluent, and all of these issues were done. And as near as I could gather from Dr. Prunenberg's, and you can certainly ask him, it appears that there was even more scientific data, if you will, in the way of dye tests and things done in relation to this permit than had been done in the past. I don't believe that they had the computer models and everything, so I think it could certainly be argued that what has been advanced here in them issuing this permit with this recommended prohibited area has been done with a lot of degree of mathematical studies and things that may not even have been done in the past. this obviously is an evolving process with them and technology, and we all know technology changes. I hear a lot of things. I hear a lot of if, what if, what if, what if. You know, in these situations, you could play that to the absolute end. What if, you know, Chincoteague Harbor were to open up and, you know, engulf the whole, I mean, it baffles the mind to expand this out into remotes. What we have to look at is what we have here and now. I've heard talk about the relay. It appears, and from what I'm hearing, that the commission now, in accepting this argument and denying this permit, is given the proposition that they are encouraging now harvesting of condemned shellfish for relay. I can tell you, based on my experience in doing this, not only economically, but as far as public health and safety, and the resource that it would demand upon the commission itself and people in enforcement to encourage this. I mean, let's look at Lynn Haven. There's been a lot of reefs and things put in Lynn Haven in condemned areas with the premise, or my understanding was, that these would be unhampered, they would be unharmed, and they would remain as broodstock areas. If this is a vital grow area, as Dr. Wesson has demonstrated in his study, it appears that a prohibited area would do exactly that. It would make it off limits for this area to continue as a broodstock for the surrounding areas. That would benefit everybody. There's been no indication that is going to do it with any adverse public health effects. As far as the objectors go, I've heard what they said. I understand their concerns. It does beg the question, however, when the initial permit was applied for, again, they had a public comment period on this, just as they did in Captain's Cove, where they could have stressed these concerns relating to water quality, relating to shellfish contamination, and the prohibited area. They chose not to participate in that process. Therefore, that process has thus gone by. This agency currently has a memorandum of understanding to be part of that process, is evidenced by Captain's Cove and your own memorandum of understanding. As far as 70 bushels relayed off of Mr. Mason's land, then he turns around and tells you of 20,000 clams, I think, off of the... In comparison, you can see what we're talking about here. And relaying from condemned areas, other than aside from what I consider public policy concerns of now promoting relaying in condemned areas, as what you have from the objectors, it's still small. 70 bushels over what time frame has he had this leased property? The permit for the effluent has been issued. The authorities that issue those permits have looked at this. They have said it can be done, and it can be done here. The question for the commission now is where to put the pipe and its encroachment on subaqueous grounds, and considering, of course, under 28.2.1205A, water quality issues and health issues. But to do that, we ask that you look at what has already been done by the issuing authority, that they have addressed these concerns and that they held it open to public comment for the objectors to address those concerns in that forum. And we respectfully request that you issue this permit or look at some of the alternatives that we have laid out. Again, the deep well injection system, my client has said they will be the first to hook up and abandon the site if and when that becomes available.
Thank you, Mr. Ensley. Any further questions of Mr. Ensley? Thank you. Matters before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Schick?
I see that our charge as a commission is to protect the public waterways and the state-owned bottoms for the public good. This is not the public good of today, or just today. This is the public good of today and of tomorrow. There's a big difference between something being condemned or restricted and then moving to a permanent situation of prohibited areas. And I think we have to be very careful about taking that step. I understand that Chincoteague has a huge problem. I live in the Northern Neck. We have a lot of the same type of problem. Land doesn't perk. There's not enough room. We've got people coming in. We can't shut the doors. But on the other hand, we don't do something to hamper the good of the public, present and future, for development's sake of today. New technologies are coming, and that will help areas such as Chincoteague in the Northern Neck and other areas of Virginia of low-lying areas. And I just see that we're here to do more than just permit a pipe and the physical effects of that pipe on state-owned bottom in the waterways. The effluency is part of our purview, and we need to examine that too.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of the concerns I have is that the counsel for the applicant has argued that we should simply, as a commission, defer to DEQ and or the Water Control Board on the issues related to water quality, to the shellfish resources, to issues related to public health and safety. And my concern is that if we did that, we would simply turn 28.2-1205 into a paper sword. I mean, I think we're required and obligated as a commission to consider these factors. We're required to consider, as we weigh this application, its impact on the other reasonable uses of the water, waterways and state-owned bottomlands, the impacts to the marine and fisheries resources of the Commonwealth, adjacent properties, water quality, SAV. These are obligations that we're bound to consider by code. So I think we can certainly weigh the fact that DEQ and the Water Control Board took their actions, but we also have additional information that we've heard today from our department that we have a new updated assessment of the shellfish resources in that area. They've been characterized as being present in high to very high densities. There's also a substantial SAV resource in the area. So we have additional data now from the VMRC that wasn't part of the consideration of the original deliberations by the Water Control Board or the DEQ when they considered those issues. Additionally, we've heard from Dr. Krunenberg that there is still a positive risk of a virus being introduced through the effluent into the adjacent shellfish resources. And I think, you know, I would not want to see the commission make a decision that was based on speculation, as Mr. Inslee argued. And, you know, so I think it's a question of, does that risk rise to a level of rational force? And I think when you consider the proximity of the resources, of the shellfish resources, I think it does. Mr. Mason's lease is virtually immediately adjacent to the area that would be closed. So the proximity is an issue. The consequences of a potential viral introduction through effluent also, I think, adds some level of rational force to the argument. And so I think there are costs and risks associated with the application. There are the cost of a lost 15.7 closure, 15.7 area that would become a permanent closure. There's also the risk associated with the viruses. Beyond that, there is a there would be impacts to the shellfish in the immediate area. So seems to me that there are substantial impacts when you consider those factors that we are to consider under 28.2-1205.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Further comment? Dr. McConaughey?
I would just like to kind of support what Mr. Robbins said. The DEQ and Health Department have looked mainly at bacteria and viruses. They have not looked at other contaminants such as BOD and nitrogen and other things that accumulatively can have a major impact on body of water.
Dr. McConaughey, not to interrupt, but for the record, can you explain or just what the abbreviation is?
BOD is biological oxygen demand.
Thank you.
And so all of these things were not taken into consideration by DEQ from their testimony, and they are important environmental factors. The Health Department's dye studies suggest that there is a much wider impact area than previously thought by their models. So I think we have to look at, you know, their studies to suggest that there may be an even greater impact than we had originally thought.
Mr. Tankard? I'm sorry, let me get counsel first. Counsel?
I think Dr. Clarification. Crotty may have mistaken something that he heard from DSS and attributed it to DEQ.
Okay.
I think DEQ does, and I don't want to testify, but I think DEQ does take into account VOD and other contaminants to the water.
I may have been mistaken. I thought that they had said they didn't.
Mr. Tankard.
A particular concern to me is the letter from the state health commissioner, Dr. Strobe, he says that the public health concern is particularly acute around these discharges. And I take that fairly serious for coming from our state health commissioner. And so I as a result, think that I'd have no other choice but to vote against this applicant.
Further comments?
I have one.
Mr. McCluskey?
I came in with a completely open mind. And what's swaying me to some extent is the technology that I believe is available for discharging pure, clean fluid from these treatment plants. If that is true, and if the applicant would guarantee the discharge, would that have any sway with the commission? The same, it would be monitored every day by a professional engineer or someone licensed by the state of Virginia to do such evaluations and maintenance. I can see where that in the future you're going to have this coming up again with discharges. I've had it personally over in the subdivision I built years ago with septic tanks were not allowed because of the high water table. And we went through the whole system, and this has been 20 years ago, and it was available at that time to have clean effluent. And whether it's available then, I don't know, but I think that ought to be considered. And also, the economic value of this hotel and restaurant is to the value of the ecology.
Further comment? Well, Strobbins?
I was going to offer a motion, unless you're...
Just a couple of things, observations. I think we also need to take into consideration, I used Judge Tyler's document pretty much as a template to listen today and try to figure out what deficiencies, what Judge Tyler was looking for during the course of his deliberations. And just for the record, we've had testimony, direct testimony from Dr. Wesson that there are, and he is, by all accounts, our expert as far as repletion and oyster science is concerned, that there are oysters present location. The Commonwealth, although it may be Mr. Birch's lease, Commonwealth of Virginia owns the bottom land, and we lease it to either Mr. Birch or Mr. Mason. If something were to happen that would degrade this bottom land for a significant period of time, it would then be removed from the bank of leases that are available to the citizens of the Commonwealth for oyster propagation, as covered under 28.2606. Finally, I'm swayed by 28.2205 that basically says we have to weigh the benefits and the detriments, taking into consideration the public trust doctrine. Commonwealth of Virginia and its citizens do own this bottom land, and I'm not swayed to the point where I believe that the benefits of placing this pipe that discharges effluent into such a small area outweigh the potential detriments. With that, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point, I would offer a motion. I move that in the case of Birchwood Motel number 05-2780, the Commission, having considered the documents and materials included in the Commission's agenda packet, staff's briefing and recommendations presented at this hearing, the evidence and argument presented at this hearing on behalf of the applicant, the protesters, the comments of other state agencies consulting in this matter, including the testimony of Dr. Kronenberg's and those items specifically identified in the Code of Virginia, Section 28.2-1205, for the Commission's consideration when determining whether to grant or deny any permit for the use of state-owned bottomlands, and taking into account the Commission's subaqueous guidelines as revised in 2005, and noting especially, as indicated in the staff assessment, that Mr. Birch's lease was granted for the purpose of shellfish propagation, not for development purposes, and confers no right to operate a discharge injurious to the waters or natural resources of the Commonwealth, or to adversely affect the rights of others, and noting that the Virginia Department of Shellfish Sanitation has cited a lingering risk of viruses in the discharge effluent of the sewage discharge, finds that the sewage discharge, as applied for, would adversely affect, one, other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and bottomlands, two, marine and fisheries resources of the Commonwealth, three, water quality, four, submerged aquatic vegetation, noting especially that a May 30, 2008 survey by Dr. Jim Wesson indicated high to very high populations of shellfish in the area, as well as a large quantity of eelgrass, and determining that the use applied for is unreasonable, and the adverse effects of a 15.70-acre shellfish closure are not in the public interest, denies the application.
For a second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion carries 7-1. Their application is denied. Thank you very much.
Just one, Mr.
That's correct. Mr. McCluskey dissented.